Mr. Batson, Rail 13. We're talking about this long march back from Bleckhammer. So how long would you march each day? What time would you start, roughly, and what time would you finish? And would, you know...
Well, by the time we'd had something, a cup of ersatz coffee or something like that, we'd set off on the march and more or less finish the day with some soup and a bit of bread if they'd got any for us. But it varied whichever day the guards got you on the move and whatever the weather was like when we finished. But you could say we were marching, keep stopping for a rest after you'd done a few miles, but it depended on the conditions, and I should say that we'd be on the move for 6 or 7 hours a day, and with various stops, say every 2 hours you might stop for a 20 minutes rest and then move on again.
What would you do during the rest? I mean,
well, relax as much as you could, sit down at the side of the road in the snow or whatever. There weren't many roads anyway, we were mostly out in the country, and it was their policy to keep us out of any big towns and villages and things like that, so that we weren't blocking the roads up for the German army, whatever they wanted to do. And I remember one particular instance, I can't remember the name of the town, the village rather, but we saw a sign saying so many miles, so many kilometres to this village. And when we got near the outskirts of it, they rerouted us on another back lane, and we went on like this for about 3 days. And when we'd finished, after these 3 days of marching, we looked at the sign again, and the same village that we'd met up with earlier on was still only about 3 miles away. So we'd been going in and out and round on these routes, and we must have done, I can imagine we did at least 30 miles just to get round this one particular village. It must have been a main route for the German army, because they kept us out of it, and it was only a small place anyway. And that's how it went on. Anywhere you got near a town, they always rerouted you round another country lane.
What about, you've said what food they gave you, which wasn't much. What about scavenging for food? You know, I mean,
well,
stealing or finding things.
Anything, if we got in a barn, most of these German farms had a cellar, and if it was in a barn and there was any chance of either getting in through a door that was always locked, and they had different things on. Well, some of the lads were pretty good at finding the way through these padlocks and things like that. In fact, when we'd finished the march, I think somewhere in my house now, I'd got a load of keys, because every key that you could manage to get hold of, you saved it in case it fitted a lock later on. And I must have a bunch of keys with about half a dozen, anything from half a dozen to a dozen keys on, that I brought back from Germany. But we got in one place, and they put us in the barn, and there was a wire fence that had been hastily, wire netting that had been hastily put up, and the German farmer had put all his fowls at the back of this thing alongside another hut. And so we thought that when the guard had gone into the farmhouse, we decided to see if we could get hold of a fowl. Well, nobody seemed to be keen to go, so it was left to me. And I went over this fence and got in the hut and got a couple of fowls. They were kicking up a hell of a din, because when anybody's chasing fowls around a room, and it's all dark, and I managed to get hold of a couple, and I was in such a hurry, I wrung the neck, and instead of just wringing the neck, I pulled the heads completely off. for two of them. Passed them all through the fence to my mates and then climbed back over the fence. And Paddy Barnett, one of the chaps that taken prisoner at Dunkirk, he says, "Ralph, there's no heads on these fowls." Well, I knew if the farmer got in his hut and found a couple of heads, he'd know that we'd had the rest of the body. So I said, "Well, I'll fetch the fowls, you go and fetch the heads out." And nobody would go, so I had to go back again. And as I got back again, I'm feeling round this hut on my hands and knees, and I found these two heads and got them and came back. And just at that particular moment, there was a panic on. The guards were going round and getting everybody on parade. And they were getting them all out of the huts, out of the barns or wherever we were sleeping. And it appears that a farmer from 2 days before had come upon his bike and said that we'd pinched his blankets, his horse blankets. Well, we'd got with Red Cross and things like that, and blankets that were issued from the work camps, we were better off for blankets than any of the Germans. We wouldn't pinch his blankets because we'd got better blankets ourselves. And he was playing on it. He was just trying to cause trouble, and he knew that we'd got some good blankets, and he thought it was a good chance to blame us and get some of our blankets. Well, the guards more or less got wise to him as to what he was. In the meantime, he'd reared his bike against this farmhouse wall, and it suddenly got two punctures, or he'd got two flat tyres when he come back, and the guards shooed him off, and they said, "Go on, enough on without you worrying us, because these have got better blankets than you got anyway." And while all this commotion was going off, I managed to get back in amongst the lads, and they got rid of him. And so they plucked these two fowls and said, "I want a bit of something for all the trouble I've been to get these fowls." So he said, "Well, you can't cook them in here." I said, "Well, I'll wrap them in one of my singlets, which was nearly new, and put them in the stew, and you get the juices and everything from the fowls in with the stew." And so I should get a bit of benefit when they were cooked, and they would in the soup. But I might have known better. The cooks that were doing the cooking of this stuff being cooked in the pig's wheel bin, they're jabbing away at this singlet. It was a good new singlet when I put the fowls in it, but by the time we got it out, when the soup was done, all it was a bag of bones. All the meat and everything had been, and the singlets had been ripped apart. And it was really good soup, but I didn't get no benefit out of it, no more than what the other lads did, but they appreciated this soup as much as I did. It was really good.
Anything else about trying to get food or scavenging for food?
Yeah, we right near the end of the march, we finished up at the side of the what we called the M1 and things like that. It was the Autobahn, the German Autobahn, run all over Germany, and pardon me, and we finished up right alongside it, and we were there for 2 days. Well, after we'd been there a day, the guard was doing what he could to sort himself out, because he knew the war was coming to a close, and so they didn't take a lot of notice of us. And me and another lad went round knocking on the doors in the village, seeing if they wanted to change any bread or whatever food they'd got for soap. We knocked on one door, and an old lady, she must have been, at a guess, I'd say she was anything between 60 and 80, but it was hard to tell. And she looked at us, and then she went dashing back up the passageway into the room, and she was talking to somebody there. And it transpired that he was an SS guard, an SS soldier, officer of some description, and he was home on leave, and that was his mother's house, and she was on her own, and he spoke very good English. He said, come on in here, like, and he invited us in and told his mother to give us a couple of bowls of soup, which we enjoyed, and we told him the story about changing soap for bread or whatever he could spare. He said, no, we've got none, I don't think. And he was in civilian clothes, and he said he was in the SS, and he'd come home for a bit of leave to see his mother, and he was undecided whether to go back to his unit or what to do, because he'd gotten a message too that the war was coming to a close. And it was quite nice for an SS man. You couldn't understand it, really. And he showed us photographs of himself in his uniform, and because he was in civilian clothes when he was talking to us. And that was another escapade that we got away with, really, because if he had been a real Nazi, he could have shot us or done anything, because we hadn't got a guard with us or anything. And we managed to get back to the place we were sleeping, and we stopped there for 2 days.
They briefly went into Czechoslovakia, that's a bit earlier, but tell us about that. You had different reception from the farmers.
Yeah, we were marching along. They kept us right on the border of Czechoslovakia as we come out of Bova Silesia and marched along. And we didn't know this, because we hadn't got maps or anything, and the guards weren't very keen on telling us anything. And we found out after they'd marched us right along the border, on the German side of the border. And over in Czechoslovakia, when we did actually cross the border at one particular point, we got in this farmyard. It was a big farmyard, and I think there must have been anything like 200 or 300 prisoners put in there. And this was another stopping place. I think we were there for 2 days. And I was down at the gate, and I heard the guard saying he wanted some transport to go and fetch a bread ration for the lads. I'd seen a cart up in the top end of the yard. So as soon as I heard this, that they wanted some transport, I went dashing up there, and there were 2 or 3 more lads as well. And we got hold of this cart, and by the time we got back down to the gate, there was 20 or 30 lads wanting to push this cart to fetch the bread from the village. And I'm jumping ahead of myself, because before we got to that farmyard, it was just like coming out of Germany into England. All the people along the sides of the road in the villages we walked through were bringing us cakes and apples and anything that you could eat, and they were giving it to us, and the guards were threatening to shoot them, but they still didn't bother, and they gave us this food, and as much as we could eat, and apples and everything. And then we got in this yard, and I got selected as one of about half a dozen men to push this cart and to the bakery. And when we got to the bakery, there was a matter of half a dozen people worked in the bakery, and I don't know whether you had one or two guards, but as we were bringing the bread out to put on the cart to take back to the camp, they kept giving us little bits of this and that and the other, and also extra loaves of bread. and we had a really good, we had more than double the rations, I should imagine, and tapioca and stuff like that that you could stew up later on. And they really loaded us up with stuff, and we brought it back into the farmyard, and it was distributed out with plenty of extra loaves, so we did really well on that score.
But you didn't stay in Czechoslovakia long. They brought you back out.
Practically the next day, or the day after, they brought us back over the border again. It was just like going back into Germany again, which it was. And Italy left us on the Czechoslovakian side of the border. The Czechs would have fed us really well, and we shouldn't have been starving in the winter, we were.
Now, another story, when you were back in Germany, is when you were nearly bayoneted for stealing corn.
Yeah.
Tell us that story.
Well, he was a proper Nazi little farmer. It's funny how most Germans that were bad were blooming little. I think it must have been something wrong with the... I don't know. If they were little, they were usually a lot worse tempered than the others. And it was a big barn, must have been 2 to 3 stories. It was a rambling place, and we'd been billeted in there, and we'd all managed to find ourselves a bit of straw and make a bed for the night. And some of the lads had found some sacks of corn that the German farmer had forgotten. And by the time I found out about it, they'd had a good helping of this corn, and I got some socks, and so I started filling these socks with this corn. And I was halfway through, that busy keep putting handful of corn in these socks, that I didn't notice the guard and the farmer come up behind me. And because there were people spread out all over the place, and they caught me in the act of putting this corn in my socks. Well, this farmer, he was plain ill, and he wanted the guards to shoot me, and they knew it was close on finishing, and they thought if they let any of us get shot, they'd be held to ransom at the war's end. And so they said no, like, and they took me down, and they had a parade in the farmyard, and everybody was searched, and it appears I was the only one that they could actually find stuff on, and I'd got 2 socks full of corn, and they're like bludgeons, really. If you've been hit round the head with a sock full of corn, you know, it wasn't like hitting you with a big stick, but at the same time, it did a bit of, knocked you a bit dizzy. And of course, I made out I was worse than I was, because they was hitting me with these things all over the place. And the farmer was there at the side of the side of the guard, trying to get them to kill me and shoot me. And anyway, they wouldn't. And finish up, he grabbed a bayonet off one of the soldiers out of his scabbard. And I was down on the floor then, reckoning to... Well, I wasn't doing so much reckoning. I was a bit dizzy. And he made a stab for me, and I rolled over, and he stabbed me in the knee instead of stabbing me in the middle of the stomach like he intended, or the chest. I've still got a scar here today on my knee. And he did that. Then when he found out he wasn't successful, he had another go at me, and I managed to roll over again and got another one in practically the same place. And they wasn't really serious, these stab wounds, but there was enough to cause a bit of bother when you all run down. And finally the guards grabbed the bayonet off the German, off the farmer, and restored a bit of order. And he said they promised that when we got to our main camp, I'd be held to ransom kind of business, add up for a court-martial or something for pinching this corn. Well, can understand the German being a bit uppity about his corn because there was not a lot of food anywhere, and that was his seed corn that he was supposed to be planting. And actually, he must have been a bit of a racketeer because he left it in the barn, not thinking that we'd find it. I believe that was it. Because any food, they moved it out of our way as quick as they could. And I think there must have been some that got found by us, which he didn't intend, and that's what's make him a bit more sober. They managed to cool him off and promised that I'd be brought up before court-martial when we got to the nearest prison camp. And that's how it ended.
And you weren't? They just left it?
No, they never bothered after that, because there was a coming to the end of the war. And
What state were you and the rest of the people in at this time?
We were pretty run down, but what with the food from Czechoslovakia and as much as we could get, stealing out of cellars where there might have been potatoes and things in a farmer's cellar, and we managed to get in. And all things like that, coal rabies, that was one of the things that we managed to get hold of. And
had you lost weight? What weight were you about?
Oh, I can't remember the exact weight, but I'd lost a lot of weight.
And how long did the march go on? It started in about January.
January, and went right on to February and March.
To March.
And we finished up in a camp called Moosburg. It was a very big camp, and prisoners were coming from all over. It wasn't far from Munich, and there was prisoners coming all over from everywhere, away from the Russians. As the Russians were advancing, they were moving everybody out of the way because they didn't want to fall into the Russian hands. They didn't want to fall into their hands themselves, and they didn't want us to fall into them. And as I say, they must have been wanting to use us as a bargaining for a peace move at the end of the war. And we got in this big camp, and the funny thing was, on the outskirts of this camp, there was a lot of bushes and fields and things, and the first thing we saw when we got near to this camp was a load of American prisoners running through these bushes and taunting the Germans, and the Germans were firing at them and things like that. And they were making jokes of it, really, the Americans were, and I think one or two of them must have got shot. I don't really know, because they kept us marching straight into the camp, and it was well overflown, overfilled with people. There wasn't any space at all. In huts that were supposed to hold about, say, 30 men in a room, there'd be anything up to 100 men in a room, and sleeping outside and all that kind of carry on.
Was there enough food?
No, it was about the same as any other time, but we did manage to get enough to live on, and we weren't in there many days before there was a commotion one morning, and I got dashing out, and where the camp was, it was a really big campsite, and there was every kind of prisoner you could mention, Americans, English, and all kinds of European prisoners as well, and Indians, and we were all living as best we could in this camp, and there was a commotion, and I could see through one corner of the camp a sloping field, going up to some bushes and trees right at the top, and out of the bottom of this field could hear guns firing, and there were tanks, the two German tanks come, and they got about halfway up the field, and we couldn't see the American tanks at that particular moment, but they were firing at these German tanks, and they managed to knock one out about halfway up the field, and then the other one got a bit further before he was knocked out, and right at the top of the field. And then as they got knocked out, these American tanks that were chasing them, about three of them, came up through the fields, and that was it, and took prisoners, whatever were left living in the German tanks. And that's when we knew we'd been more or less liberated.
How did you feel?
We felt elated. All the chaps were in a real good cheer about it. And then shortly after that, this must have been very early in the morning, say about 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning.
Would this be in April or March, would you say? Or don't you know?
It's hard to say. I should say the end of April and beginning of March, but it's hard to say.
That's the wrong way around. End of March, beginning
end
of
March,
April.
Beginning of April, yeah. And it must have been about 8 o'clock in the morning, and then when it got to about 10 o'clock in the morning, the lads were moving around trying to see what to do and get out of the camp, because half of the guard had packed up and gone. One or two of them were being shot at, and there was not much resistance at all, and the guards had had enough. So I heard a load of lads shouting, especially the Americans, and I went over, and there was a jeep there, and a chap sat on the back of it, General Patton it was, and I didn't know at that time. Like, I said to one of the Yanks, "What's going on?" He says, "That's old Blood and Guts Patton." He says, "Now he's off to chase the Germans into hell." And he set off with these. He sat on the back of this jeep, and he got these two pearl-handled revolvers in his trousers, and in his gun holster around the middle. And he set off like, I said, "Who's that?" And this American said, "It's General Patton, old Blood and Guts." He says, "He's going to chase the Germans out of into hell." And away he went. Well, shortly after that, we were making holes in the wire and getting out and going all over the place.
What happened? What were you looking for? Food?
Food or anything. And we managed to get into the German headquarters that run the prison camp, and there was all kinds of people mulling about in there, and got into this room on the second floor somewhere, and there were some medals in a cupboard, and everybody was diving and getting hold of medals, German Iron Crosses and all things like that, and I managed to grab a couple of them, and also I got a bayonet from somewhere, and I think it was an officer's dress bayonet. I can't really say for sure. I brought it home with me. I've not seen it for a year or two, so I don't know what's happened to that. But anyway, when we go out to this place, we thought we'd go into the village and see what was going off in there. And on our way into the village, there were people coming back, and there was one chap with a couple of pairs of German Alpine boots, brand new. He got these round his neck and whatever else he could carry, and my boots were just about finished. Got holes all over the place. So I said to him, I'd already got some cigarettes and that off the Americans, and I got one or two food ration things, and I said to this chap, would you change me these cigarettes and food for a pair of them boots? And he said, no, you're no good, like, he wants a lot more than that for them. So anyway, with having this Burnet in me thing that I picked up, I tried him with everything I'd got for a pair of these boots, and he kept saying no. And so, finish up, I got this Burnet out, and I'm going to do my swap with that. I'm going to use that for bargaining. And he thought I was going to stab him. So when he saw me draw the Burnet out,